Okay, so now Jan, can you tell us a bit on the transpositions throughout Europe?
Thank you very much for inviting me to speak today. It's an honour to be at the National Assembly. Apologies also that my especially legal French isn't up to talking to you about droit d'auteur this afternoon, so I'll try to use clear English. I hope also you're not bored yet by the Copyright Directive in particular. In one way, it seems a very technical and a piece of law that would only be of interest to a very small number of people, but this is really one of the big effects of the internet over the last 10 years. It's made what was previously something really only of interest to publishers and record companies. Now is everyone potentially with the internet is a publisher, and this has been one of the problems. The only people really before who were expert on copyright law were the ones who benefit from it, and it's something that's difficult for the average citizen to see how important it is and to learn all the horrible complexities of it and to get involved, as Philippe said, to try to counteract the battalions of lawyers and lobbyists that the big, especially the movie and the recording industries, deploy at every opportunity when this kind of legislation is being framed. The Copyright Directive, it actually could mark a turning point in that regard. I think there has been a lot of debate about it across Europe. You know, groups like LeWeeks and I have done a lot of work in the UK, and there are groups right across the EU who have said, look, maybe this is a step too far for all of the reasons that Robin, all of the problems Robin described with the experience in the US. The EUCD uses some quite similar language in various aspects, and we're trying to make sure that we don't import all of those problems from the US. I think, as Philippe says, that there's some wiggle room in the directive, which means you can cut off a lot of the problems if governments are clear what they are and if you explain it to them. And of course, they will always have it be getting the opposite explanation in the other ear from, again, all of the vested interests on the other side. But we have had some success in the UK in talking to our patent office, and they made some changes, although they didn't go as far as we would have liked, from the first draft that they published of the implementation last summer. They were hoping to bring it in within a couple of months, because the directive actually was agreed a long time ago. It was May 2001, and all of the EU member states were supposed to have implemented it by December last year. In fact, it proved so controversial that only, I think, Denmark and Greece met that deadline. Since then, Austria, Germany, Italy, and the UK have very recently, the remaining member states, so that's less than half the member states, still have actually implemented the directive into national law. Embarrassingly for Ireland, which is taking over the presidency in the new year, it hasn't even published a first draft yet, so they are under real pressure now to get that into place. Apparently, the Irish government has decided they want all outstanding European legislation in place before they become the presidents. Otherwise, that's not very communautaire of them. I just finished a few months ago a report on the status of the EUCD transposition into national law, or at least mostly the draft laws at the time. The good news on that is most of the member states that have implemented the directive, or at least their drafts, took advantage. There's a long list of optional, what the directive calls exceptions to copyright, which the Americans would call fair use or fair dealing rights. It's things like private study, making a personal copy for your private use of things that you've legally bought, support for, say, blind people, allowing them to have a text-to-speech reader read some text to them, which all seems, you know, news reporting, criticism and review, parody things, which really people tend to take for granted. The problem is, as again, the situation in the US, we have these exceptions, and they are being put into national law, but then the next article, Article 6 of the directive, gives all these protections to these copy control mechanisms. And even if you have legally acquired a copyrighted work and you want to make use of one of these exceptions, which is in your national law, if the copy control mechanism doesn't let you do it, you have no right to try to break that copy control mechanism. And anyone who sells you a tool, a piece of software or hardware, which will let you do it, is in even more trouble. Looking at the punishments, the sanctions that have been put in place in the member states, they vary. I think the UK at the moment, probably the UK and Italy, have the mildest sanctions, at least for you circumventing a protection mechanism in the UK. It's just a civil offence which someone would have to come and sue you and prove that you would cause them harm by getting around a protection mechanism, which obviously you wouldn't have if you were only exercising a legitimate right you already had. Italy, you can be fined €154, which would be significant to teenagers, but at least it's not the end of the world. At least it's not, for example, in the French draft, where you could go to jail for 2 years or be fined up to €150,000. So those are Portugal's even worse. You can go up to jail for up to 3 years there. So these are the details that actually make a really large difference in practice in the national implementations. A few other things to watch out for. You know, you might like to look at the French, particularly implementation. One very arcane little piece of treaty implementing language in the directive is this thing. If you ever hear of the three-step test, the directive talks about it, and intellectual property lawyers go on about it all the time. It's just a clause from the Berne treaties and also the WIPO treaties. And what that says is any exception to copyright can only be in special cases. It can't interfere with the right holder's normal exploitation of a work, and it can't unreasonably prejudice their economic sort of rights in the matter. Some of the countries, like the UK, have said, "Okay, this three-step test is there, but we the governments are going to look at that, and we're going to balance it against the exceptions we're putting into our law, and we are going to make the decision, and we're going to make sure all of the exceptions we put there are clear and pass this test." Unfortunately, the French draft and several other of the implementations put that limit actually into the law itself. They say, "Okay, we'll give you the benefit of all of these exceptions, but if they don't conform to these tests, then actually you don't have the benefit of them anymore." Not only is that really unclear, I mean, how on earth would you know? Even copyright lawyers argue about what these tests actually mean. How is the average citizen meant to understand that for themselves and to know what they legally can and can't do with something they've bought? It's also, again, going back to does the law protect the weak or the strong? All it does is it takes away rights from citizens. It doesn't take away rights from the right holders. It doesn't say, "Oh well, actually these exceptions should go further in this specific case." They can't do that. So that's something perhaps to look to amend as well. What else? Another battleground there has been in a lot of the member states is on research. The EU is quite justifiably proud of the high-tech research sector. It is supported and exists in Europe. In the security area specifically, you're probably not sort of security obsessives like me, so you might not have heard of this, but the US government just a year or two ago chose a new encryption standard, which the whole US government will be using for non-classified documents, and it will almost certainly become the standard that's used in all computer systems around the world for encryption, called the Advanced Encryption Standard. And the US government chose this standard just by running a global national competition. They had many, many entries, but actually the entry that won was actually from Belgium. By a couple of academics there, an algorithm called Rheindahl from their names. So Europe has a really good, thriving security sector. I'm particularly interested in this because that was my academic background. I was a computer security researcher before I got involved in all of this messy legislation. The Copyright Directive, after much lobbying, explicitly includes as a recital these restrictions on breaking copy control mechanisms shouldn't affect security research, because we don't want all of our security researchers in European universities and research institutes to be worried about going to jail, as there have been many, many threats in the US. Unfortunately, because it's only a recital, it's only in the preamble of the directive, it's not actually in the articles there, several of the countries have ignored it in that implementation. Even the UK ignored it in its first draft, and that was something that we lobbied heavily on, and we actually now have that in UK law. They say, okay, if you're circumventing for research purposes, you know, for researching security mechanisms, that's fine. And that's entirely sensible, because otherwise these critical national infrastructures you hear so much about, the internet being used for so much more safety critical work, well, we want people to be working on the security of those mechanisms. We don't want to be scaring people out of the field of security research. So I think that's really important. I don't know if that is in the French draft, but again, that's something you want to look out for. A couple of other differences across the EU and how empowered citizens are under the implementing legislation. The way that the Copyright Directive tries to deal with this conflict between people having legitimate rights to use copyrighted works, but them not being able to do that through because they're restricted through software or hardware, the sensible thing would be, as Robin said, okay, you can those circumvention bans don't apply if you're trying to do something legitimate. That isn't the way they did it. They had intense lobbying on this point from the music and movie industries, who said, oh, you can't possibly allow any circumvention of these measures or you'll enable, you know, rampant global piracy. What the EU says is, okay, so first of all, the rights holders have to try to come to voluntary agreements with citizens groups in the EU, which is rather weak. I mean, you can imagine how interested Walt Disney or Sony are, you know, these big multinational firms in coming to voluntary agreements to, as they see it, reduce the value of their intellectual property with citizens groups in the EU. So if that doesn't work after some vague period, then the different member states have different mechanisms that citizens can try to use to say, look, we have these rights, but we can't use them. So in Italy and the UK, Denmark and Spain, you can go to a government body and make a complaint, and they then have to go away and talk to the rights holders and try to negotiate some solution with them. And ultimately, at the end of that long process, if there's still not a resolution, then the governments can order the rights holders to allow their citizens to use those rights. Some other countries allow the citizens to go directly to the courts and to sue the right holders. So Austria and Germany have that. France had that, I think, in its first draft, but then in its second draft changed it to say we'll have a panel of mediators. Interestingly, if any Dutch or Belgian citizens are here today, your governments thought this was so unlikely that the rights holders would stop people using their rights that they wouldn't even bother implementing this bit of the legislation yet. They would leave that till later, and if there's a problem, maybe in 5 years' time they will legislate to fix it, which I find amazing. Finally, just to complete the litany of horrors, I think maybe one of the scariest bits of the Copyright Directive that hasn't really been talked about much yet, because the technology to bring it into effect in a way hasn't really spread, but all of these exceptions that are set out in Article 5 of the Directive, all these rights that citizens have, don't apply to online services. So if you're accessing something, the language of the directive is at a time and a place chosen by you, then actually the person you're getting the content from can say, well, sorry, you don't have any of those exceptions in copyright law anymore. This was something that was dreamt up by someone from Finland who had been very heavily involved at the international level, and he called this the Save E-commerce Clause. He said, without this, then e-commerce will die in Europe, which is a really hysterical overreaction. But anyway, it's there in the directive. And as content is supplied increasingly over online services, you know, if you can pull out your mobile phone or PDA and get access to videos and music and blah, blah, well, be aware that you're giving away basically all of your rights under the Copyright Directive. What it comes down to then is the license that you agree with the content holder when you sign up to the service. And we all know when you're faced with a form that you have to scroll through for 25 minutes to read a bunch of, you know, impenetrable legalese, how many people really even read it and understand it, let alone have any bargaining power. You know, what are you expected to do? To click the button, say no, Sony, I disagree with what, you know, the restrictions you want to put on this, my rights. I demand that you supply them in a different format. Of course not. The citizen on his own has no bargaining power against a multinational company. So I think this is something to really keep an eye on. It's hard, unfortunately, that the directive is actually quite explicit on it. And when you talk to national governments, we tried to really limit this in the UK implementation. And we said to the government, do you want this to come about? Do you, even under the definitions that come out of the directive, almost any content that you access over the web could come under this definition if you are using a mobile browser. So that's something where governments don't really have much space to try to protect their citizens' rights. And for that, and for some of the other problems we've described, there is a procedure in the directive whereby it's reviewed every 3 years by the Commission, and that first review is underway already. The Commission will publish a report next December, which then the the council and the parliament can look at and say, okay, do we need to amend the directive? So that's probably where I would start if I was coming up with places for amendment. So anyway, I hope that hasn't depressed you all more than you already were, but if you have any specific questions.
I have a question about, it's not directly on the EU CD, but it's about the English party system. We've seen that the most proactive supporters of these directives have been UK socialists. So could you explain us what's going on the other side of the channel?
Yes, it's very strange that the whether the UK Labour Party could call themselves socialist anymore is another question, but yes, I mean, Arlene McCarthy in particular, you may have heard of, is notorious as the European parliamentarian who was the rapporteur on the Software Patents Directive, and now she's the shadow rapporteur on this new draft directive I mentioned earlier. Sorry, I forgot to talk about the draft directive on the enforcement of intellectual property rights, which goes even further than the EU CD and brings in the things that the EU forgot, as the music industry would put it, like the subpoena powers that Robin mentioned in the US. Not quite in exactly the same form, but this enforcement directive will have, it calls it a right to information for right holders to get access to. So Arlene McCarthy is the shadow rapporteur on that, but even better, Jean-Louis Fortou, who just happens to be married to the CEO and chairman of Vivendi Universal, is the actual rapporteur in the Legal Affairs Committee. And unsurprisingly, she has pushed very hard. The Legal Affairs Committee just voted last week on amendments to during this first reading process on this draft directive, and Jean-Louis Fortou pushed very hard to widen the scope. Initially, the Commission wanted this really to just be a counterfeiting, anti-counterfeiting directive. It wanted to focus on commercial counterfeiting and piracy, which is, I absolutely have no problem with. Unfortunately, Jean-Louis Fortou and her sort of allies managed to widen the scope to any infringement of intellectual property rights, and in a complete sort of parliamentary cock-up as well. Part of that deal was, okay, well, a lot of the MEPs tabled amendments saying get rid of these criminal sanctions in this directive, because this is something else new. The parliament is really trying to innovate here. It's trying to introduce criminal sanctions through the co-decision procedure, which a lot of the council members are very unhappy about. But there was a deal between the MEPs and the Legal Affairs Committee that they would drop the criminal sanctions in exchange for widening the scope. But unfortunately, one of the MEPs, I'm not sure if she just forgot this deal or made a mistake or claims she made a mistake, Mercedes Ecker, who's a Green MEP, managed to table an amendment which was accepted in the Legal Affairs Committee to keep the criminal sanctions. So this directive is just getting worse as it goes through the Parliament rather than better, unfortunately. So this is something else. If you want to do something about this sorry mess, this is something else you can look into. If in the pieces of paper you got on the way in, my organization's website is listed, so if you have a look there, there's a lot of information on this, and feel free to get in touch with me by email if you would like more information.
Okay. Philippe?
I'd like to ask a question to Robin, because in the US there was an analog to the counterfeiting and piracy European directive. I think it was called S2395 or something like that. It was a anti-counterfeiting and piracy bill. But I think it is sort of stalled. Now it's blocked. It's not really in process anymore. Is it the case? Because I ask this question because if we can say, even the American have doubts, this could be a relatively powerful argument.
I think that particular bill has stalled, but I have heard that we can expect to see it again, and it will be continue to be pushed. And so it's not the end of it. We can't claim victory yet.
So, another question to Robin or Jan? No?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Considering the disaster
juridical disaster, and considering that it's not only existing on the IP front, but also on many other fronts like individual liberties, etc., etc., especially since a certain September. How to start, where to start to build up something like a common informational goods.
Shall I? Yeah, just quickly, I agree, I despair sometimes as well. It's hard enough to affect the national policymaking process, never mind the EU policymaking process, but something my organisation and several other EU national level NGOs have started up is called a group called European Digital Rights, which is an umbrella group for, I think at the moment we have 14 members across the existing and some of the accession states. So we are trying to pool our resources and have someone in Brussels who can watch what's going on, go to these meetings. So if any of you are interested in that, the website is just edri.org, or email me and I can let you have more information on that.
Okay, so maybe one last question to Jan or Robin? Okay, no. So, go ahead.
Since no one is asking questions, just one remark about Africa. It may be the case that in 2 years from now, we will have to move to Africa in order to be safe. One reason is most African countries did not sign the YPU copyright treaty. And a lot of them signed what they call the OAP, which is kind of YPO for Africa. And this is much more reasonable than what we currently have with the YPO copyright treaty. So that's a sign of hope, maybe.
Thank you, Loic. So, as you could all guess, we shall not have the final debate moderated by Godfroy that was originally planned. I had a discussion with him. C'est pour qu'ils comprennent. Bon, ok. Donc, comme vous avez bien compris, nous n'aurons pas le débat final qui était initialement prévu. Nous sommes, d'une part, parce que nous avons passé pas mal de temps dans les questions-réponses à chaque interlocuteur, et donc nous estimons que cette discussion a déjà eu lieu, et que, bon, de toute manière, nous arrivons près de l'heure à laquelle on va nous inviter à quitter les lieux. Donc, je vais quand même profiter des quelques dernières minutes qui restent pour remercier tous les gens qui se sont déplacés ici pour assister à cette conférence, pour remercier les intervenants de grande qualité qui nous ont fait le plaisir et l'honneur de venir. Donc, Monsieur Lidon, Tariq Krim, Philippe Aigrin, Loïc Deschary, Robin Bross et Jan Brown, et remercier également Christian Paul pour nous avoir permis de tenir cette conférence à l'Assemblée nationale. Je suis vraiment très heureux qu'on ait pu avoir quelque chose de co-organisé par l'April, UCD.info et le FIPR dans ce lieu. Ce n'est pas un petit symbole, je trouve, et par temps réel également. Voilà, je voudrais également remercier ceux qui ont participé à l'élaboration de cette conférence. Donc il y a également Godfroy Beauvallet pour la partie programmatique qui a pas mal aidé, et Séverine Tessier qui a été très très précieuse pour que tout fonctionne et tout soit prêt, hormis le vidéoprojecteur, mais c'est une autre histoire. Aujourd'hui. Donc, je vous remercie. Je me permettrai de vous recontacter par courriel afin de vous indiquer où les transcriptions, où les vidéos, où les enregistrements audio seront disponibles. Mais par la même occasion, je vous inviterai à nouveau à participer au travail que nous engageons dans le cadre du groupe Savoir de la Fondation Laëtan Nouveau, et à participer à cette coalition des biens communs que Christian Paul a appelé de ses voeux. Je vous remercie.